Anything combat with Johnny K.
But it's anything combat, though.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Johnny K. Show podcast, wherein we talk to successful individuals about their life and career so we can get a better insight into how we, too, can achieve success and fulfillment in our own life. Today, we're joined by a Renaissance man of sorts. He's a business owner as well as an athlete. He was an NFL pro linebacker. He played for the San Diego Chargers. He was part of 3 Pro Bowls, and he also made 2 American pro selections. So he's also the founder of an MMA league, Lights Out Extreme Fighting, as well as Lights Out Apparel. Please welcome to the show, Sean Lights Out Merriman. How are you today, Sean?
What's up, my man? How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
All good. It's going great. So I read up on you. Your story is insane, man. I was really intrigued with your story. It was such a eye-opening story because there are so many people going through such tough times right now, and I feel like the more that somebody can share your story, it would put them in a better position to do anything in life. So when I looked into it, just a background information just to start off, I want to ask you, what was it like growing up when you were homeless for a little bit? And what would how does that influence you, and how does that influence your desire to give back to the community now for people that are struggling?
It was tough, man. It really was. And when you're growing up in those circumstances, you're trying to go through it and figure out, why is this happening to me, right? Like, what, you know, why do I have to go through this? You know, not having food or coming home to an eviction notice on the door. Your lights and gas is off, so it's freezing cold in the house. And then you got to find a way to go to school and go to practice and act normal, right? When, you know, the rest of the kids, they got food, they got, you know, a good home, they got things. So, I mean, you're trying to fit in, knowing that you don't fit in because when you get home, that your life is much different than theirs. And so what I did learn from going through all that stuff and being homeless, you know, sleeping in the shelters, back of the cars, me and my mom and my sister, and going through that is it gives you an extra layer of skin, right? It just gives you a different kind of meaning for, first of all, being grateful for things. It gives you a different level of work ethic, because at that point, you got to work for everything that you got, right? You got to grind away, find a way, make a way, stay afloat, and you find ways to win, man. So I used to, in fact, when you talk about looking up, you know, my story, I used to be embarrassed to talk about it because I was embarrassed how we live. And when I got recruited by the University of Maryland while I played college football, I didn't want my coaches to come out and look at, see where I lived at. So I verbally committed, and they were trying to come out to do a signing. And so I asked my mom to drive us up to the campus because I did not want them to see where we lived and how we lived, because I was embarrassed. So I think that without being embarrassed, you don't want to talk about it, right? You want to tell anybody. But when I started to see, I had my first big article about me growing up and how I grew up. When I got into college, the Washington Post, big Washington Post in Washington, D.C., big, you know, a publication in the U.S. And I had all the people reaching out and saying, man, thank you. They were like, thank you. Thank you for sharing that, because I went through that too, or I'm going through that. And so, like you said, I found that being able to talk about it actually helped a lot of people overcome some of the stuff that they were dealing with.
So run me through Frederick Douglass High School. When you were growing up there and you just started playing NFL and you also did a little bit of basketball, what was that like during that point of your life?
I started playing basketball first, and when I was a kid, and I started to foul out of every basketball game because I was aggressive. So my high school coaches, they said, hey, look, we got a sport that we think that you'll be really good at, right? And so they took me to the football field, and I tried out for the football team. Mind you, I never played football before, and never really watched on TV like that either. So I asked my coach, I said, what do I do? And he said, you see that guy with the football in his hands, the kid? Hit him. I said, that's it? That's all I got to do? So yeah, just hit the kid with the football. I said, okay. And I went full speed in practice and lit this kid up, right? I knocked him under the Gatorade table. His mom came, it was at practice. Mom came running on the field screaming, what are you doing? It's practice. Why are you hitting my son like this? Everything, right? So I hang my head down. I'm embarrassed. Like, I'm like, oh my God, but you know, his parents yelling at me. I did something wrong. So I got back to the huddle and my coach said, hey, do that again. That's what we like that. Do that again, right? And so I just thought it was fascinating that I can go and hit somebody as hard as I want and get applauded for it. And so I grew that level of passion for the game. We lost our, in high school, we in Frederick Douglass High School, we lost our home, our apartment to fires, our house to fires. We couldn't afford the bills. My mother had lit a candle in my room and because our lights was off. The candle burned through the table, burned through the TV, our house burned down. So I ended up moving in with my coaches. My coaches took me in. And that was like the first time I had a normal childhood. Before then, we didn't know when food was gonna come in or if we were gonna get evicted this month, life's gonna be on. It was a constant of that on and off my whole entire childhood until I moved in with my coaches. So that's when I kind of, for the first time, got a normal sense of what it's like to be a kid.
So you started from there, then you did your NFL, and then now you've shifted. And to be honest, there's not that many people that have been able to successfully shift their career like you actually have, specifically in sports careers too, seeing that when people stay in basketball, they stay there, they just commentate, they do whatever. If people are in NFL, they coach. Now, you've gone to a completely different sport, which is where I have my expertise in MMA. So your lights out extreme fighting, when was this idea made in your head, and then when did you know that you were going to implement your tools, your capital, your resources to build that business?
Well, you know, funny enough, I started training in 2006 during the off season with Randy Couture, Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz. So I was around the big guys at the time in the mid-2000s when MMA just kind of started to catch heat. And I think that at the end of the day, I had a passion for it because I grew up boxing. My uncles were professional boxers. So in that DC, Maryland, Virginia area, there were a bunch of championship boxers. So I just grew up naturally around a lot of boxers. And I was hitting the mitts one day, and Jay Glazer from Fox Sports gym, he had a gym. And he looked over and said, man, you can box. I said, yeah, you know, I got family in the box and whatever. I got, you know, a little bit of a background. He said, have you ever tried MMA? I think it'll help you out in football. I said, shit, really? Okay, let me know what to do. So he texted me an address to show up at the MMA gym the next day. And I walk in the gym. Jay Glazer is on my right, on my left. Randy Couture is on my right. I'll go to Randy Couture's gym. And I'm like, holy hell, you know, it's Randy Couture. And so anyway, I saw the benefits, hand combat, being able to open your hips, leverage, weight balance, distribution, being, you know, mobile, agility. A lot of that stuff in MMA, I saw transition into football. So I knew that it was something there that made me a better football player. Now, I ended up launching Lights Out Extreme Fighting in 2019. You know, we've done well. We just, we're on Fubo Sports, Fubo TV. And we're on Bally's a week later. So I just got word that we crossed over. We jumped 90% viewership from last fight. And we just set another record. And so for us, it's just been really cool because I've been around this sport for 17 years. And, you know, so the MMA community is funny, man. Because it's very tight-knit. And they don't like outsiders, right, coming in there. They just don't. And so I've been around the sport for so long and had media out there from in 2006, 2007, 2008 training. So I kind of just transitioned right into the MMA community because I was already known there outside of football. And I had a passion for this sport and this business. And so to see us making these type of jumps that we are, I can only imagine that the rate that we're going, I think that we have a really good chance to be, you know, one of the biggest promotions in the world.
After hearing that, where you said that's great news about your viewership. So, seeing that I've looked into so many different promotions internationally, I looked at your promotion, I watched the first event just to look at clips, and then I've looked at the most recent events. And the conclusion I came to is that the quality has just increased. Like, you've gotten way better fighters, the fights are more entertaining. Now you're telling me your viewership's increased. To be honest, I'm not surprised. I thought the product was good. So, what do you have to say about your promotion's 3-year plan? What's next in the next 3 years? How do you go from here, seeing that you've already increased so much? How do you get to the next level of quality?
Well, for one, even in my playing days of football, I've always been super fan oriented, right? It has to be fan first, because if not, you're not going to win, right? These are people that's watching your product, and it means a lot to when somebody is noticing us getting better, right? We have gotten better with our production. We put more time and effort. The fights are getting better, because now fighters from all over the country are reaching out to us to get on one of these cards. And it wasn't always like that, right? Like, you got these other competitions, so many promotions out there, and good promotions at that, that you're really competing with. And like, somebody's gonna go with a promotion that's been around for a decade, as opposed to us, only been around a couple years, because they know them. And so you have to kind of fight that battle a little bit. But now we're getting more known, we're getting a lot more eyeballs, and we're growing organically, right? I'm a big fan of giving the fans more. And so we got a lot of other verticals coming when it comes to fan engagement tech, to give more data, more information to the fans and people watching home. I want fans, the ones that can't make it to our fight, to feel like they're there, right? So the more information we can give them during the fight, having prizes, winning graphics popping up, they clickable links during our fight, they can get really creative. I want them there. The other part of that is, we have like tech gloves that are coming, right? Or gloves that they got chips in them. A big partnership here we're gonna announce shortly. AI that's gonna be introduced. We're almost in a sense like an incubator for a lot of these media and tech companies, right? Because we are small enough to maneuver. And this is nothing against UFC. UFC is great. I mean, they're massive. They're the big dogs. They will always be the big dogs. And I know that people are talking about coming in this business, competing with the UFC. You're not. You're just not. I mean, wishful thinking, great, go compete. We're not in this business to compete. We want to perfect and just grow our niche fan base and what we're doing. That's what I care about the most. So introducing a lot of this tech coming up, this data, being very data driven, and giving more information, more numbers, more facts, and creative stuff to the fans is where we really want to land. And obviously, distribution is a key. Fubo isn't all over the world. They're in, U.S., Canada, some parts of France and Spain. I would like to be put ourselves in a position to be seen in Australia, and in South America, in the UAE, in China. We need to be we, the distribution I'm really focusing on. So, outside of the tech, giving fans more information, really focus on the distribution, because this is about being seen. We got a great product, as you said. We're growing. We put on a great show, and it's time for it to be seen all over the world.
Sean, that's really intriguing what you just told me about the new technologies that you're trying to implement in your promotion, seeing that MMA is such a difficult area to put technology into. Now, you're telling me you're putting tech into the gloves. What would be the purpose behind doing such a thing?
For one, we want to get as much data on the fighters as much as possible, right? For statistical reasons, for health reasons, right? If a guy gets punched at a certain speed of power impact and gets knocked out, we know that's the number that knocks someone out, or someone gets hit, and that's when they get injured or hurt or something. We want to collect all this data. Also, I think the betting company is going to come and be involved in some of the data that we're able to collect once we perfect it. Now, that's going to be a little bit down the road, but we will start testing stuff here in the next couple of fights or so, and see how accurate we can get this data.
Let's talk about that fight that I'm really excited for. So, Montez versus Cataline. I really like Montez in this fight personally, but how do you see the fight going, and why do you like the fight?
Well, I got a hell of a team as far as the matchmaking, and I brought in a team a couple fights ago, and it's completely changed everything of what we're doing, now in the matchups. And we always hear styles make fights, right? And I think that with this one, it's going to be a complete banger because they like to stand up and go. Abby, she is, she gets after it. And I typically stay out of the matchmaking, right? So I've trained at a lot of these gyms, right? I know these coaches, managers. I've known them over the years personally. So, I have a good relationship with a lot of these guys. So I stay out of the matchmaking. I let the matchmaker do it. But this one in particular, I was like, hey, we got to get this done. We got to do it. It's our first women's main event that we've had with the company, and I'm proud that that happened because I've been pushing for it. But also too, you don't want to do it because, oh, it's just two women and you're trying to make a statement. You want two badass women, right? You want a hell of a fight and put on a show, and we feel like we got that with Abby and Jackie.
When did sign them up become a thing?
Well, the funny part about that, you're not talking about just the growth in us and more people watching us. So when that happens, fighters all over the country start jumping in my DM, my direct messages on Instagram and Twitter, and trying to get on a card and trying to get, be a part of the organization and have fights. And so I'll say, okay, you know what? I respond, hey, send me something, right? Send me a clip of your last, who you fought with for promotion, how'd you do? If you got to, show me a couple rounds of fight, whatever. I'll pass on to the matchmaker, our matchmaker. So some of them were really good. I mean, some of these fighters can really go. I'm like, yep, we can sign you up, right? So that you're good. And we normally did get them a fight or a couple fights. Some of them would send me of clips of them getting knocked out. And I would say, like, why would you send that? Why would you send a clip of you getting knocked out? And I would ask the fighter, I said, hey, do you got anything else? So no, that's what I got. I'm like, dude, we can't sign you up, right? And so that happened about six or seven times. I was sitting around one day and I said, hold on, sign them up. Don't sign them up. Wow. And so I came up with that because of that reason, man. So the first time I posted it, I didn't really think nothing of it. It got like a few hundred thousand views. And everybody's on the sort of comments like, man, this is funny as hell. And I was like, this is a sign them up. This is not a don't sign them up yet. So there people that know about it, don't sign them up, because I had four or five straight sign them ups. And then when I did the don't sign them up, it was even bigger, right, than the sign them up. And so I said, I gotta keep doing this. And it's funny, I was in Texas, this in Dallas this Friday, Saturday, and I'm going to the Dallas airport. And there was a group at the bar, they're screaming, sign them up, right at the top of their voice as I'm walking to the airport. So I think that's pretty cool.
So, as you mentioned, MMA fans, they're so loyal. It doesn't matter where the fighter goes, they're there for the fighter, and then from there, the promotion grows as well. We saw this at the very, very start. Now McGregor's famous, but beforehand, when he was at Cage Warriors, a viral clip of him knocking someone out went crazy. Now Cage Warriors is a massive organization. Now, with one championship in Singapore, Stan Fairtex had her viral clips. The promotion grew from it, became famous. For you right now, there's a versatile fighter that I really like in your organization. When AJ Hodgkins was his clips, the fact that he's growing as a person and his brand is growing, I feel like that's been really beneficial to your organization as well as him. So how do you feel about that fighter?
I like AJ a lot, and we try to get as lot of a lot most local fighters we can. We have a fight in San Diego, we got a fight in Long Beach or LA. We try to get 80% of the card local. For one, great ticket sellers, and two, they get their personal fans, their coaches, their teammates, their managers, family all come out and support. It's the environment that changes dramatically when you have local fighters for the most part on the card. AJ was somebody that kept my to grab my eye for a couple of reasons. One, he's a former football player, right? Played linebacker at Oregon. And I always said this. I said, if you find AJ's 32, he's going to have a great career. He's going to do well. You find a 24, 23-year-old AJ that decided, you know what? My NFL dreams are no longer, right? I tried it. I gave it a shot. Didn't work. I want to go kick some ass now. So if you got a pissed off, athletic, explosive AJ Hodgkins at 23 years old, you can get behind him. He's going to do a lot of damage. And I've been consistently trying to transition a lot of these former athletes, especially football players, the former athletes in general, but somehow football players make that transition a lot faster, a lot easier than some of these other sports in this field. You get a young guy that played a couple years in the NFL, probably played linebacker at Alabama, played linebacker at Florida State or one of these Big Ten or SEC schools, or strong safety, and you get some of these guys in the cage with the proper training, you're going to create a world champion. And that's why I said that a lot of the heavyweight fights and stuff like that are happening now. Like, you know, you got Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury. You got a couple guys out there. But your big heavyweight champions are playing linebacker right now for you know, Texas. They're playing, you know, strong safety for Oregon, right? Or you know, for Florida. And so it's starting to come around now that the upside in the MMA now there's real money. It's a global sport. Now you have these guys that are more interested now because they can get paid for one, build a career industry for themselves, and they still want to compete. They still want to get after and compete, man. So I think in the next year or two, the world champions or your world champions are going to be former athletes from other sports.
AJ, I totally agree with you, specifically with the NFL players. Their conditioning is insane. Their strength to body weight ratio, their cardio, everything about them is actually world class and better than the MMA fighters. The only problem is that they haven't had the skills yet. They haven't had the training yet, exactly. So why do you think that the NFL players will have such success in the next 2-3 years? Because I totally agree with you.
I've seen it, man. Myself, right? I don't call myself a fighter, but I still, to the day, I still spar. I sparred the other day in Top Rank, couple rounds. The guy is probably going to be the cruiserweight champ at some point in time. So I can get in there because I'm athletic enough to hang. But if anything goes the distance, skill level, I don't have it. I'm not there because I'm not training like these guys. But I would say if you take a 27, 28-year-old Sean Merriman and gets right into MMA, starts training seriously, I could have, you know, I would have turned pro at 29, 30 years old and had a 10-year career in the sport and made a ton of money in the sport. And so so I can see what the training does if a guy takes it seriously. And not to, you know, I know a lot of people bag on Greg Hardy, right? A lot of people have their personal feelings toward him, don't like him personally or whatever. Greg Hardy, especially his first 5 to 7 fights in UFC or whatever, he did well for where he was, right? He fought some championship fighters, and it took him to the distance while only training about 2 years. 2 years. These guys have been training for 12 plus. He's trained for 2 years and was able to take some of these guys, to these championship fighters, to the distance. He, theoretically, a newcomer off the street, you're not fighting at that level after training for only 2 years. You're just not. You may be a fighter, but you're not fighting 5-round a smoke show. You're just not against a championship fighter, a guy who actually has won a belt before or potentially is going to win a belt. You're not going to do it. So that's what I'm saying. Like a lot of former football players, you're not walking in with 2 left feet, right? You're disciplined. You understand. You're willing to learn. You're willing to drop your pride and your ego when you walked into the gym because you're going to get your ass kicked, because I did when I first started out. I mean, I had 185, 190-pound wrestlers taking me to the ground, and I couldn't get up when I first started. And it was demoralizing. It was like, you know you're stronger than them. You know you're bigger than them. Why can't you stop this guy from taking you to the ground? He's just much more skilled than I was. So you get the right guy, a young guy that can go in and get stuff done. They're gonna be a champion one day.
So we've seen time and time again, the MMA career is very short-lived. It's around 25 to 32, we keep seeing, is usually the prime. Now, seeing that you're the expert in American football, do you think that an MMA fighter or an NFL career is shorter? Which one do you think shorter?
NFL, for sure. A fighter, you can train as much as you want to, and you can still take fights. You still have an opportunity. In the NFL, once they come back from your playbook, you are done, right? Like, that's it. There ain't no going back out there I think the typical NFL career is around 3 years. And I think it's way more harder on your body, not on certain parts of you, I mean your complete body, than MMA is. And I've done both. And I've been clocked on my chin in both, in football and in the cage. And I think that football is much more harder on your body than MMA is.
Sean, are you still part of the insurance industry?
Yeah.
So you're still doing that venture as well as all the other ones. So you're very busy today.
MMA and insurance. That's all I do. I go to the gym, I work on lights out, and I work on insurance. That's all I do.
Who introduced you to that industry?
I got into it during the pandemic when everything shut down. It was the first time in my adult life that I had nothing to do, right? Because I had my show on Fox Sports. That got shut down. We couldn't go in studio because of the pandemic. My MMA league is based in LA, in California. That got shut down. We couldn't have that. And so one of my best friends in 17 years said, hey, man, I'm doing this thing in insurance. I think you should look at it. And I laughed, actually. I said, hey, should I put on a red shirt and khakis and go knock on door? Because that's all I knew about insurance and the State Farm agent, right? I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. I laughed. And, you know, we're still in the pandemic 3 or 4 months later, and I got my license, and I started to build a company with a company called Family First Life here in the U.S. In my agency now, I have 250 agents throughout the country in my insurance agency.
Why do you think you've been so successful in such a different multitude of different industries and professions?
I said this, and when I say this, because a lot of athletes struggle with the transition because they don't know what to do next, right? One thing about us is athletes, and we're the most disciplined people walking on the planet Earth, right? From the time that we were a kid, someone's telling us what time we got to be at a meeting, what time we got to work out, what time we got to watch film, what time's your film study, what time's lunch, what time's dinner. And so you become this disciplined person, and we're passionate about what we do, right? Running out into 70,000 people out in the stadium yelling and after a big hit, a big catch, a touchdown, there's no feeling like that at all. And so that's why guys struggle to go to the next thing. But I was telling them, I said, if you find your passion and made you feel how you felt when you ran out to 70,000 people, you're going to win. You're going to win big. And so for me, I found two things that I was passionate about that I love doing that I don't even really see as work. Lights Out Extreme Fighting and my insurance company, and being in insurance, helping these people, helping these families, growing these agencies, changing lives. And so with those two, man, it's not a forceful situation. I just love to do it.
Fight promoting is such a competitive field to enter, as well as just competing on the business landscape. So I want to ask you, seeing that we already know how difficult that is, how competitive is the insurance market right now?
There's not enough agents for the people to need life insurance, truthfully. When I got to this business, I realized and understood how much life insurance was a necessity, right? And I think the pandemic showed us that it's not a luxury anymore, it's a necessity. You need insurance because anything can happen. Insurance is not for you, it's for the people around you, so you don't leave them with a burden. And so when you look at it that way, I talk about insurance a lot different, and I look at it, yeah, we make great money. It's a lot of money in insurance. But when you're helping out a family and something happens, I remember a year after I started my agency, I had to cut the first check of someone who passed away that we insured. I hand delivered a check to the wife, to the wife of the husband that passed away. And the look in her face when, it was a couple hundred thousand dollars that he had coverage. She had no worries, wasn't gonna lose the house. They had three kids. And that is when I knew that I was like, okay, people need this, because the ones that don't are having GoFundMe pages, and the ones that do are not worried about if they're going to lose the house or how they're going to take care of the kids.
How important is it to stay ethical in business? And is this a difficulty?
No, it's not. It's not. First of all, I don't do or say or be involved in anything that's going to stop me from sleeping at night. Right? I don't want to do that. I don't care how much money's involved. I don't care what is the outcome. If I don't feel a certain way, if I don't believe in something, I'm not going to say it or do something if I don't believe in it, because I won't be able to sleep well at night. And that's just a personal thing with me in general. So you're selling insurance, and you're helping these families out. I sleep good at night because I know that people are protected, and I help them do something for their family. So being ethical in business or in business practices in general, it's been easier for me because I'm always going to try to do what's right.
I saw something going around in the business sector of social media, and it was a funny hypothetical scenario, so I'll share it with you now. So it's a coin flip, and if it lands heads, you get $10 million. If it lands tails, you get nothing. Or your other choice is get $100,000 and you're guaranteed the money. Seeing that you've started from nothing and you've gotten to this point where you're successful, what if somebody was in a bad position, a poor position? What decision do you think they should be making?
Take that coin flip. Take that 10 million. You know,
Why do you think they should take the coin flip?
because I think that most people, and especially underprivileged or people that's in a bad situation, that make bad decisions. And they do it because there's certain circumstances at that time. And if you're broke and you don't have anything, you're only taking that $100,000 because you need it. And if you had $20,000, that $100,000, you had $5,000, that $100,000 isn't important because you can still get the necessities of life. You can pay your bills, you can eat with $5,000. You're okay. $10 million can change your life. And you don't have another opportunity to make $10 million ever. You can find a way in your life to make $100,000. And that's what I'm talking about, and I'm speaking for somebody who was poor and homeless. And if I was going home and I was hungry that night, and somebody gave me that same option, I'm going to ask for that coin.
One of my favorite authors, you've probably heard of him, is Dale Carnegie. He wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yes,
He, um,
I got it. I got the book.
in his other book about public speaking and confidence, he said to build a confident foundation, what you need to do is you need to find one area that you're good at and become so amazing at it that this desire that you have to really excel in one area will build your confidence at holistically in any area that you do. Now, looking back at you, I think that this has been a little bit similar, because if you've said to me, if you can get good at being an athlete or being good at American football, then you can discipline yourself in another field. So has this affected your life? Is this concept been apparent in your life at all?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because when you understand, first of all, when you're disciplined is the hardest thing for even an entrepreneur starting out a new company, whatever. So you got to be disciplined with your time, disciplined with your money, disciplined in your habits. You got to be so disciplined and consistent in what you do. I've already done that. I've lived that life. So all you do is you take that and you're applying it to something else that you're passionate about. That's all you're doing. And I know it sounds very simple and cliche, but at the same time, if you have a passion for something and you're disciplined with it, and you are not afraid of the work to put into it, it's almost impossible for it not to be successful. Now, how successful is always the question, right? Is it going to be massive? Is it going to be big? Is it going to be just good? But you're going to be successful if you have that same attitude.
Sean, you just mentioned there about the discipline. Even I struggle with it. Seeing that you've had your businesses where there were positions where, of course, you would feel like, oh, this is really hard. Things are not going correctly. What do you say to yourself when you feel that discipline shifting to get it back on?
No matter what happens, if it's Monday, if whatever bad happens on a Monday and I go through it, I always say to myself, well, tomorrow's still Tuesday. Or if it's Tuesday, I always say it, tomorrow's still Wednesday. And you have to keep that attitude and not think about tanking or tucking your tail or being depressed or whatever off of a bad day, a bad week. That, those things don't last. They just don't. So if you keep that in mind, man, you'll be fine. You know. So I had to, whenever anything happens to my staff or anybody around me, if it's Monday, I'm like, oh, tomorrow's still Tuesday. So you got another shot, another opportunity. And I keep that same mindset in everything I do.